welcome everyone to this episode of the Love in the Mirror podcast. I'm Shannon Bodie, your host, and it is my delight today to bring everyone the gift of incredible teacher that I've had the opportunity to work with this year. I'm going to be talking with Riitta Ruutanen Wiley, and we're going to talk about stress and our mindfulness responses to it. So whether or not you are a novice to meditation and mindfulness, whether or not you are a longtime practitioner, anywhere in between, there will be just some lovely nuggets for you in the course of our conversation today. So thank you so much for being here with us. This is Love in the Mirror. So I need to really introduce my guest today beautifully. She is so accomplished and would not describe herself this way, as I've experienced such deep humility. I am deeply grateful to have this conversation with Riitta today because I got to work with her through her course, a powerful refresher course for me in mindfulness-based stress reduction, or MBSR, this year through Duke University. Let me tell you a little bit about Riitta. She grew up in Finland and works as a healthcare professional. She did in villages and refugee camps in Pakistan. She lived for 4 years in Sri Lanka during the Civil War while homeschooling her children, and started her first meditation and yoga class in Cairo, Egypt in 2000. Her journey with meditation started in 1987. 4 months of training took her there with the Himalayan Institute in the US and in India. And as her health challenges deepened her practice and led her to study therapeutic forms of yoga and mindfulness, she just continued to deepen. She says it's thanks to a wonderful women's group in Cairo that she ever considered teaching yoga and meditation, and now we all get to benefit from that practice. This group fostered self-care, healing, and empowerment amongst their multicultural participants there. That was so inspiring for her. She takes a secular, modern approach with her classes that builds on a scientific understanding of the benefits of meditation and yoga, and hopes to inspire others to tap into their own unique inner resources for insights, well-being, and success. She teaches mindfulness courses and workshops at Duke Integrative Medicine, which I got to receive with her, and yoga through Yoga for Life, her LLC, in North Carolina. After her sons were born, she felt a need to express her feelings in writing and has done so with beautiful poetry. In fact, we'll get to receive some of that as we close out today. And she found that process meaningful, and it quickly became a habit. So Pausing Mindfully is her self-published work that reflects diverse topics from meditative insights and painful encounters with people in conflict. And she really invites us to find her own meaning in her work. Just truly, truly beautiful. It's a wonderful inspirational tool for all of us. And so I will stop talking about Riitta and introduce her with us. Riitta, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Shannon, thank you for having me.
So there's so much that we can discuss in our time together. Oh, but let's get started with just, you know, you shared how, you know, in your powerful bio, how you came to practice mindfulness meditation a little bit. But would you like to speak to that a little bit more for our listeners to hear from your own experience?
Yes. So I started my meditation journey in late 80s. And I had a regular practice. I used to joke about doing 7 minutes of stretching and then sitting. And I was quite happy with my practice. I found it very useful, very calming, reducing stress. And then in the winter of 2000-2001, I had a multiple disc injury. And since I have a form of scoliosis, which refers to a curvature in my spine, it can be challenging to recover from something like that. And I took some time to think about how do I approach healing at this time. Mm-hmm. And since I was already a meditator and I had practiced some yoga, I decided I want to see what therapeutic style of yoga and meditation could offer me. And around that time, I stumbled upon Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, Full mm-hmm. Catastrophe Living, which describes what is now the national model for mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR. So I decided to give it a try. So with therapeutic yoga, you know, advice that I also got, I started going through John's book chapter by chapter and using his guided meditations. And I found the process not just helpful, but incredibly healing on many different levels. And I especially embraced the body scan. I found that that was the most healing in terms of pain, the perception, what the impact it had to my perception of pain that are present across the body. And what I learned was that with the mindfulness approach, I was able to reach deeper states of experience, go below the sensations of pulling or pulsing or heat, whatever I felt around the area of injury, and connect with an energetic network, which I kind of think of as the undercurrent or the template for the physical body. And when I was able to get there and linger there, dwell there, I felt shifts in this energetic field and moments when I felt like some of that holding and tension around the injury shifted and released and melted away.
Wow. There's a beautiful pause. You mentioned some comparisons to other traditions there as we relate to pain. And this difference in the mindfulness approach that wasn't trying to tell you to do anything with the pain, but just watch it and be with it. And it sounds like that created a profound shift. How did you experience pain as you deepened that type of practice and watching?
So what I found that over time, my body scans, which I, by the way, did up to 4 a day, the pain was very intense. And so I was lucky enough at the time I was teaching, I just started teaching classes, but you know, there was plenty of time for self-care.
Yeah.
So over time, it transformed my relationship with the body. And in some ways, I fell in love with my body and its amazing ability to support me, whatever I was doing.
Wow.
So, you know, so often we take our body for granted. Yeah. And through the body scans, I just started feeling this tremendous deep gratitude for what my body had done for me over the years and how I had taken it just like this. Yes, it's always going to be there with this attitude. Mm-hmm. And the more I practiced, I also found that I was less likely to be hijacked by my anxieties about the pain, by my emotions and thought stories. So that over time, I not only developed a more friendly relationship with the pain sensations, just observing and watching them move around, which in itself, once I really dwelled in that space, led to me understand that if something is shifting and changing, it can also go away one day, which it did after 4 years.
Wow.
But the same thing started happening with my thoughts. I started to see thoughts less as part of me, I, me, mine, so to speak, and more as events in the field of my awareness, so that when I had worries about how long the pain is going to be there, I started being able to, like, as if looking at those thoughts from a distance, reflect them rather than being engaged with them. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite words to myself at the time was, interesting. That's what's present.
Interesting covers so much, doesn't it?
Yes. See, I wanted the simplest possible word.
So. This is here right now. Interesting.
Yes.
Oh, Rita, I love this. Such a deep dive already. And I'm so grateful to hear your process. I feel like this, and I felt like this in class with you too, where there's so much that you share that could become a post-it note reminder for me. So I'm going to pull that out for our listeners too. These ideas of falling in love with your body. Oh my goodness. Not just moving from a place of tolerating pain, but falling in love with and being in gratitude for this body that does things for us. Being less likely to be hijacked by our thoughts about pain and thoughts in general. And such a sweet detachment. And not in a way that is a disassociation, but watching thoughts, having you use the words a friendly relationship with your thoughts so that you could see them as less a part of you and more as events. So it wasn't an ignoring or a separation from the thoughts that were there, but and then you, on top of that, you coined a word, a phrase, a mantra to, oh, interesting. This is here right now. We could all find our own word to watch our thoughts around that, right? Of, oh, well, that's here. My goodness. Or, you know, whatever that is for each of us. So I appreciate all of those so much. And you shared, and I thank you for also including the timeline of how you worked with your pain, that 4 years of 4 body scans on average a day. One of the things we talk about in class a lot is, whew, this attitude in mindfulness practice of we're not trying to get somewhere, but so entering with a little bit of unattachment. But it did make a profound experience in your pain overall. And so I have a lot of listeners, a lot of clients in my practice that might have a real, even aversion to, you want me to do a body scan and sit with my pain? All I want to do is get away from it, right? I don't want to be here with it. How did that start for you or begin to shift? Or what would you say to folks who, gosh, I don't even want to do a body scan. This hurts. I want to be as far away from this as possible.
Well, perhaps first I should, I probably wasn't clear. Mm. I did not do 4 body scans every day. I did up to 4, but okay. Definitely always 1 a day. Okay. I don't want to give the impression that, you know, I'm just this amazing person, because I don't think I could do 4 body scans for too long a day.
It might be quick ones too. You know, it's all, everyone finds their own pace. I always say that. So might be a minute body scan, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, that is so true. But yes. So, okay. If you don't want to do the body scan, I would not push myself. Mm. Because I think we know ourselves better than anybody else. Mm. And I think it's really important to, you know, understand that if you work with mindfulness, it is more or less do-it-yourself job. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely
to speak.
Yes.
So note what experiment, note what practices you are drawn to, and start small. Don't try to push a practice no matter what you read about it. You may want to try it every now and then, and you may find that your relationship to it changes. But I would work with, you know, how can I appreciate myself at this time? How can I show love to myself? What is this situation teaching me? Is there something that I should let go? So, you know, coming up with inquiries that might help us move forward.
Beautiful.
And not being too stuck with whatever you read in a book. Because sometimes, you know, you may what you find and what comes from your own inner wisdom is just the right path for you. And while some of the techniques may not have worked for me when I was in pain, might actually work for you. And so realizing that what I'm sharing is just my personal journey. But as you know, mindfulness is an invitation to experiment. It's not about this. Definitely this works for this, for everyone. It's see what would it do for you? Would that be the path for you or not? And being okay with whatever choice you make.
There's so much permission for us to tailor our practice and to avoid prescriptions, right? I think when we're, I know a lot of folks might come to this podcast, to meditation or mindfulness in general around, well, there's a significant stress. I mean, it's in MBSR, stress reduction, right? And there, of course, there's a goal in mind, but there's such a focus and emphasis, which you highlight so well, around how we get to find out what our unique recipe is for ourselves. And I think that's one of the things I appreciate so much about it, is it can have this attitude of curiosity, just curiosity. So, oh, what might work? And you mentioned there's a couple of things that might be. So, Rita, you mentioned that there were so many practices we could be drawn to in that last statement. I really appreciate that, as well as so many lovely examples of gentle inquiry questions we might ask ourselves. But could you, you know, elaborate a little bit on what potential practices folks might continue or look into for themselves when it comes to mindfulness practice? Perhaps some of the ones that we alluded to in class as well?
Yes. We usually start with awareness of breathing, where we befriend and embrace the breath just the way it is. And very quickly, people realize that embracing this moment and even the breath, the simple breath, right?
Yes.
Just the way it is can be challenging because our attention drifts somewhere else. But that's how it is for everyone. And over time, people find that their capacity to be focused on the breath increases. But over time, even it goes beyond that. You are first aware of the pressure increasing in the body as the breath comes in. The pressure decreases as the breath goes out. You feel into the flow. You feel into the texture of the breath. And just like with the body scan that I mentioned before, for many people, what happens next? They actually drop into the undercurrent and feel into the energetic qualities that actually support our breathing. And then that puts us into a completely different field of experience where we are more likely to feel greater peace, centeredness, groundedness. And we start receiving insights. Inner wisdom, you know, refers to, that's one word we use for, you know, getting insights about ourselves, the way the world is, and what's going on really with us in any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we go from that, we go to body scan, which I already mentioned earlier. We practice mindful walking. And we usually start mindful walking by walking very slowly. So mindfulness invites us to consider that slowing down allows us to have a richer experience of this moment. Mm. Also, being focused at the feet is something that we really don't normally do, other than we're trying to avoid the rocks or potholes in the road.
Right.
But with the mindful walking, we're simply curious, what does it really feel like when I'm flexing the ankle and I'm starting to bring the heel off the ground and I move it through the air and the other leg has to take all the weight of the body. And we start noticing the incredible fine-tuning that takes place constantly in the body when we walk.
Mm.
And I find mindful walking is extremely helpful for people who find that sitting practices are not accessible to them at this time.
Yes.
Because here we are moving the body. And sometimes I've come across with people and said, can you do help me with stress? But please don't ask me to sit.
Exactly.
And so I said, well, how's walking?
Yes.
And we go and we walk fairly fast at first.
Yes.
Because I really think, you know, the more we can personalize a particular practice, the more likely it is that people will continue with it and the more likely that the benefits unfold. So yeah. If someone is living a very fast-paced, stressful life, you know, perhaps the right way to start would be doing fast-paced walking. And then every now and then slowing down a little bit and seeing, what does that feel like if we slow down? Mm-hmm. How about speeding up now? And at what speed are you comfortable?
Mm.
So I like to mention the mindful walking because that's really, I found that it has been very eye-opening and it's allowed access to these practices for many people that I have personally worked with.
Yes. It's one of my favorites, actually. It helps me slow down to sit. It's one of my core practices that I'm working with right now for everything you mentioned. It actually helps me slow down to sit and calm my mind enough and meet my body where it is. So I love that example. Thank you.
Exactly. And that is what we are after here. The idea is to facilitate people to find what practice and what pace works for them. And we practice mindful movement as well. And again, you try to emphasize that find your own pace with the movement. For some, it is extremely slow. And for some, it is faster. And so not getting hung up on what the other people are doing, but rather honoring your own state of being at the time.
Yes.
Because whatever you feel you need comes from whatever happened before. So everything arises from conditions preceding. If you had a really stressful, frantic day, and all of a sudden I'll say, we're going to do this really, really slowly. It's like you are hitting the wall at 60 miles an hour.
Right.
So ideally, I would say, let's just move a bit faster first, and then find our way to a slower pace gradually.
I love that. I love that example. And it gives us permission when many of us think of meditation as, oh, we sit down and I'm instantly calm. It gives us transition. And, you know, those, we talk about the core attitudes of just accepting where we are. There's nothing wrong with it, but meeting our own pace of our own mind where we are first. So thank you for that. Are there other practices that you would emphasize before I ask you something else? You mentioned the breathing, the body scan, of course, mindful movement, both with movement in general and walking.
The other practices in MBSR come out of the Brahma Viharas, that are the sublime attitudes, mm-hmm. which were the Buddha's primary teachings on the heart qualities. And they are slightly different from the practices I mentioned before, where we're either focused on the breath, or we are scanning the body through body scan, or we are moving the body. And the whole idea there is to simply embrace what is as it is. Mm-hmm. So here the idea is different, because we are actually actively cultivating qualities that are skillful and wholesome.
Yes.
And so the MBSR class includes one of them, which is metta, which is loving kindness. Mm. And I find that many people, after they finish the class, they make the loving kindness practice as their primary practice. So it is very popular, and I personally like it, and I use it in my everyday life when I feel like I am stressed, or I'm there driving on a road and someone nearly hits me, and I feel that, you know, fear and anger and whatever is arising. I'll say to myself, because the loving kindness phrases are usually verbalized by starting, may I be a certain way. So what I use commonly is, may I accept myself the way I am. Mm. I may not be responding the perfect way, but may I accept myself the way I am. Wow. And then I usually continue with that, may I be safe and free from harm and danger, which is one of the traditional loving kindness phrases. And then I extend the same wish for safety and protection mm-hmm. from harm and danger to the person who nearly hit me. And then to everyone, you know, who is driving in a car at that time.
Yes.
And then often to the rest of the universe as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderful practice and very easy to bring into your everyday life.
Mm. Whether or not we're sitting, it can be in any, as a response, once we catch it. Right?
Exactly.
I love that.
But I mean, you can bring, of course, the breath, the body scan, as you already mentioned. You can do mini body scans and simply note what is there to be felt around your eyes, the mm-hmm. jaw and shoulders, if those are your typical tense areas. And that can take a minute. And mm-hmm. so all of these practices can then be adapted to what we call into informal practices that we utilize in our everyday life.
There's so many opportunities for grace, acceptance of how we react, particularly in loving kindness metta, but also that, oh, I can do this as a thought choice. I can offer this up. I can accept where I am. I will share with you that loving kindness is my other core practice. And it's become fun to see where if I might have a frustrating interaction with someone, then I can offer that, right? I also, as soon as our class concluded, my big takeaway lesson was about slowing down. And the very next day, I got a speeding ticket. Like, okay, all right, universe, message continues to be received. And I haven't gotten a ticket in years. And I was rushing. And of course I was. And it was so lovely because I'm pulling over and I was sending myself like, okay, just may I be like, rather that it actually gave me, and I was hot off the presses with our intense practice, right? Or longer time than I had typically been spending. And rather than yelling at myself, judging myself, getting so mad, getting angry at the police officer, who was very kind, by the way, pulled me over, it was okay. It's okay. Like I could approach myself with, all right, here's an opportunity. It's okay. which is one of my key phrases. It's okay. May this go well, right? And I was able to thank the officer for his kindness because he was very kind. I did not get away with a warning for anybody who's wondering, but I did. He was very kind given the severity of ticket he could have given me. And I was able to thank him for his kindness and send him some metta, right? Thank you for your kindness. May you have a good day too. May we all be safe. And he even said to me, I just want you to be safe. So that became my, oh, right. Okay. May we all be safe. May we be safe together. Thank you. So I wasn't removed from the swirl of emotional reaction by any means, but I could watch it with a little more compassion to myself and to him, quite frankly, in the moment. So I thought I just have to pause and share that for anyone who thinks that there aren't everyday applications of this. That was a real one. It was pretty funny. So,
I think you touched on something really important when you said, we can be mindful even when we are stressed. It doesn't mean that we generally hear how mindfulness allows us over time to start embracing what is as it is, seeing with the eyes of non-reactivity and acting from the heart of compassion. And while that is so much true, but wouldn't life be boring if we were just too even keel all the time? Right. Emotions are wonderful, but what we do with these practices, we are cultivating and attending to life from a position of awareness. We are aware of the joy. We are aware of the stress. And, you know, the moment we are aware, we also have a choice, because so much of our time we live on autopilot. I think the research points to something like 90% of the time our actions and the way we behave in the world is totally automated. It's a habitual way of being in the world. And 95% of our thoughts are pretty much the same they were day before and the day before that. And so mindfulness really says, how about taking the blindfolders out? What would it be like if you actually kind of dropped into this moment and intentionally aspired to see it with clarity, with friendly open eyes, so to speak.
Yeah. Friendly open eyes. And that's a lovely segue too, Rita, into some of the core attitudes in mindfulness. And, you know, we've alluded to some of them that, oh gosh, if we can just take, what's a core attitude that I can take toward myself first, you know, and then others, maybe all at once. But would you like to spend a few moments addressing some of those core attitudes that we talk about? I know we've touched on acceptance a lot and a bit of that not judging ourselves, but some of the other ones too.
Yes. So the core attitudes, the ones we refer to, others may have heard of others as well, but what we mean when we refer to them are non-judging, patience, beginner's mind, trust, non-striving, acceptance, and letting go. And research has shown what the meditators have for thousands of years been telling us, that what we focus on and how we do it shapes and can transform our emotions, our thoughts, and our tendencies, and how we relate to ourselves and to everyone around us.
Yes.
And so these attitudes are the ones that they use to develop these qualities. And now what is so wonderful is that modern science has uncovered this truly to be so, that we're literally changing the tendencies and the wiring in our brain because our nervous system, our brain is plastic. It changes according to experience. And so when we start embracing an attitude, let's say like patience, we can change our impatient tendencies over time.
Yes.
And in terms of which attitude people should work with, I would just suggest that perhaps ask yourself, what is your habitual reaction to life and everything it throws at you? What's the tendency that usually pops up? Is it you start judging things, or is it that you get impatient with things, or you just say, well, how do I get to this goal, or how do I get over this? And let that guide you which attitude you may want to start working with. And the process is very similar, or can be very similar, to what I just was talking about in terms of doing a body scan. Let's say I feel very impatient. So then simply noticing what impatience feels like in the body.
Ooh, that's great.
What is the felt sense? And if you work with that impatience, you may find that as you pay attention to it and see the patterns of tension related to it, those patterns start shifting and changing, usually toward ease. And so that at some point, the impatience shifts to another sensation. And very often what I found, if I just hang out with something that could be seen as an obstacle or disturbance in my practice, if I just hang out with it for a while, I find that I find my way to something that I truly care about. There's a concern about something that then has somehow grown into this experience of impatience. But if I can kind of let that unravel, I find that underneath there is deep care.
I so appreciate that letting unravel, because when we look at, you know, our reactions, like when you said that beautiful question, what attitude do you have when life throws things at you? Those responses are old protectors a lot of the time, right? Or habitual protectors. You know, I know mine are around safety or definitely striving. I will fix it. So it gives me a place to accept, right? Oh, accept the places or stories or events, known or unknown, that created those habitual reactions and responses. Like, oh, I got to protect and I got to fix it. And if I can sit, then I might identify where some of those stories are from. Those might be known to me, but those can soften. And it's funny, I've almost gone through the back door a little bit in my own practice. Like, oh, no wonder I'm so called right now to work with trusting or non-striving, right? Literally slowing down, speed ticket or not, right? Of, oh, trust for me becomes a beautiful antidote to fear or safety constellations of thought or reaction, right? And non-striving for me becomes a really sweet response to hyper-fixing or controlling, that when I can accept those reactions in myself, I can remember, you don't have to strive, not in this moment. And those can become little reminders in my practice or compassionate practices too. So I really appreciate the core attitudes as not fixers, but things that also can emerge when we give ourselves permission to sit with the reactions.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. Trusting, it really invites us to, you know, turn towards the fears and doubts we have about ourselves and cultivate trust in ourselves, our own feelings and inherent wisdom, and trusting that if we do our practice, those insights start arising, that when we do that over time, we are uncovering our own strength, wisdom, and peace. Mm-hmm. And the non-striving is so funny, and it's so important that it is one of those attitudes, and it, because, you know, we, like you said, we have the goals. We want to get over something that's an obstacle. Yep. And when mindfulness point of view, you look at it, the goal here is just to be ourselves. Mm. Just to let this me be known, re-familiarize ourselves with our resources, most of which are invisible and non-verbal. So the non-conceptual part of ourselves that is wise and that mindfulness helps us uncover. Mm. So it is kind of funny.
Isn't it? In the non-striving, we actually make it there. But you have to really, is another core attitude, really let go for that to be. It's such a paradox. But it also, I love the unravel verb because it does take time, right? And, you know, the coach in me always wants to remind folks of, and you've referenced this very well, that you find what works for you in a pace that works for you. It might be 5 minutes of fast walking. And I know the research points to more regularly is where you're going to see more progress, right? Or more experiential support. So finding what works for you, it might be 1 minute a day, 5 minutes a day, that really, and finding and leaning into the practice that feels the simplest to begin with. We're continuing. Give us some room to just to trust that the practice over time does make changes, to trust that. So one of the things I want to give us room for before we close, Rita, is your beautiful poetry. And you know, when you and I were talking about practicing for this interview, I had asked you, gosh, how do you use mindfulness in the face of uncertainty? And so I would love, before we close out today, to let folks really receive your beautiful poetry, as so many of us did in class. And if you would like to open up with that, how do we use mindfulness in the face of uncertainty in general? And I'll let you take it from there.
So one of the things we spend time on with in the MBSR classes is this capacity that we have to pause in the midst of challenging circumstances. So we take the lessons from our sitting practice that if we simply pause, even in the midst of a difficult conversation, and note what is there in the center of our field of awareness. It could be some worrisome thoughts. If we can then note the emotions that are present, and if we can then ground ourselves with the experience of the body at the time, perhaps noting a couple of the prominent sensations, perhaps tension around the shoulders, the jaw that may be tense, and then feel a breath or two. Most of the time, people come back when that particular practice is introduced and say, it was so helpful because I could see how it shifts my relationship to the situation. It allowed me to have perspective or wider view of what was really happening. So that is the power of these practices. And you referred to my poetry, so I have a poem that came out of my own way of taking time to ground myself when things feel overwhelming. And it kind of refers to, I take my stand. I recognize that I am complete, I am whole. I have a place in the scheme of things, no matter how troubled I might feel. And the name of the poem is, What If? What if? What if I breathed like I belonged here? As if it were a blessing extended to me each moment. As if I had a place in the universe, no matter how small I felt. Perhaps then my muscles would allow the ground to support them, no longer tensing away from it, as if ready for some imaginary undercurrent to come and sweep me away. My ears would relax into knowing that we hear with our whole bodies, the eyes softening into a wider view, so that the moment's intelligence would define the landscape and no longer be bound by our habitual regard.
Rita, thank you. I'm tearing up over here. I always have this when I am both host and receiver right now. And what if I breathe like I actually belong here? I want to leave us with that today. And for folks to get to replay your beautiful words over and over again as much as they need to. And I do want everyone to know that in the show notes, you'll see all the places where you can find Rita on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, her website, and references to her book, Pausing Mindfully. So if that poetry really spoke to you, there's more where that came from. And Rita, I'm deeply grateful for your continued walking the path with us, for all the lives you've touched through your own deep experiential practitionership, and for your real soul leadership in meeting the moment, and for spending this time on Love in the Mirror today.
Thank you, Shannon. May our practice support us.
Yes. So, everyone, thank you for hanging out with Rita and me today in this episode 37, how we find that peace in the moment. And for those of you also looking for some deeper support in acceptance, in trust and safety, I also recommend the Love in the Mirror course. You can find that at innerpeacerising.com. This is the course that I lead, and it's a pace-as-you-go course for 8 weeks or as long as you would like to take it. A lot of the things that Rita and I discussed today, including some guided practices and techniques of meeting ourselves and others with greater love and acceptance and cultivating the relationships that we seek in a deeper level, are all there in that course for you. Please email me, shannon@innerpeacerising.com, with any questions about that, and you can register today or send that gift to a dear one, a friend, for some deeper love in the mirror as we all continue to find that peace in our practice, whatever that is for each of us. Thank you so much, everyone, for being with us every week, and may we all connect to this peace, this breath that's right here. I'm Shannon Bode, your host, and have a wonderful rest of your day, everyone.